Hello, business owners, entrepreneurs, and executives. Welcome to today's Business Radio, a new hybrid radio show that airs both on air as well as online and on demand. We discuss all the topics relating to your business. Today's Business Radio interviews experienced business advisors to help you build enterprise value, improve profitability, and plan for your eventual exit. Whether you're an entrepreneur just starting out, a seasoned business owner, or a top-level executive, today's Business Radio will help you achieve your personal and professional goals. Today's Business Radio is available around the clock, around the world, online, and on demand at todaysbusinessradio.com. Now, the host of today's Business Radio, Tom Lyons.
Hello, this is Tom Lyons. I'm here with my co-host, Sam Zornich, our producer, Jorgie Jorgensen, and our today's guest is Jeff Starbird from the Lurie Beskoff Lapidus & Company, a CPA and consulting firm. Thanks for being with us today, Jeff.
Good morning.
Good morning.
We've got a topic today that I'm very interested in, and that's vacation properties. And I'm interested in it because of my grandchildren, of course, and the idea of finding a vacation property and keeping it in the family for future generations is appealing. But I think you're going to tell us today with it takes some pretty good planning in order to set that up properly.
So in other words, Tom, I can bill you for this session?
Oh, boy. Here we go. Here we go. Sam, get your clock out. No bill for this one, Jeff. Family memories and vacation properties.
Well, what I usually do, Tom, is I'm a tax partner at Lurie Beskoff Lapidus and spend a lot of time with family businesses. And with that comes some estate planning and some issues with families. And I've actually found that a lot of the issues that we have in a regular family business, the business operations, have the same type of issues that you have with the vacation home and transferring that to the next generation. What I found over the years is that vacation properties, as more and more people get involved with vacation properties, the values have gone up. And I believe that even though they may be stable now, they probably haven't gone down like our homes. So there's still a substantial asset in our clients and the family's estate. And what I found is that unlike personal residences, many families don't transfer those to the next generation, but do try to transfer the family vacation homes, whether that's a ski lodge or a place in Florida or your cabin up in northern Minnesota.
A place full of memories for when you're raising your children and grandchildren, and the tendency is to want to try to keep that in the family somehow.
Exactly. And what some folks don't think through, and that's why planning is important in this area too, is that the idea of shared ownership with more family members can become an enormous challenge. And there can be conflicts and issues, and hopefully we'll address some of those today.
So if a business owner or if anyone wants to try to keep a vacation property in the family, how should that happen? Do you set up a separate entity? What do you do with it?
Well, I think the first step is, you use the words, do they want to? I think the family has to sit down. It's very important for the family to plan this and express their interest and, you know, how many members of the family express their interest in keeping the property. And what I like to tell them to do is once you've looked at the potential conflicts versus the benefits and the family says, let's go ahead with this, I think they should do something like a mission statement. And we do that for businesses, but sit down and say, what are the goals and how are we going to do this? And once a family decides to do that, that's where the attorney or the accountant or the other professionals can help with that.
But what if it's not a family? What if it's one person who, like you were saying, Tom, wants to set something up, wants to have the keep the cabin for future generations?
Well, you can do that too. Now, that's much easier because a lot of the conflicts we talk about come from having more than one person participate.
Okay.
I think if the parents have one child and that child expresses an interest in the property, the first generation transfer is pretty easy. Now, you can carry that forward because if the child ends up with grandchildren, then you have the more multiple family members involved, and that's where all the issues, frankly, come with this.
With more than one owner.
With more than one owner, yeah. I mean, there's an estate side to this because it's a valuable asset. But then getting to more reality is how do you do this? And as we know from family businesses and these prior podcasts, not all family members get along in business. And the same thing occurs with a vacation home.
I had a friend who had received, she and her three siblings, you know, sisters and brothers had received each a share, equal share in their family cabin in Massachusetts. And if I'm remembering it correctly, one of them forced two of them out.
And I think that gets exactly to the next question. So let's say the family's decided to go forward, and let's see, how do we transfer this? Now, if you don't have a plan, and that's probably the example you just gave, mm-hmm. is that the property of the parents would go into their estate. And unless the will or the revocable trust they have, the living will, unless that designates that property to go to one or more people, that asset will be distributed by the estate in equal, what we call undivided interests. And from that point on,
they could either sell it and divide up the money, or they could keep it and have each have an interest in it.
And that's where the problems usually come, because in your example, Sam, maybe one person lives out east and the rest live out west. So maybe mm-hmm. one child wants the money, either financially or because we're not going to use that property, we're never going to get there, and the other person's going to have all the access to it. And the estate, the will, doesn't say anything on how to resolve those issues. Mm-hmm. So you can have some very bad or tough situations, and then one person says, sell it, and the other person says, I want to keep it. and that person with an undivided interest doesn't have to sell it to the other sibling. They can sell it to an outside party, so now you have non-family. Or they could go to court to divide the property and force sale of their interest. So if the goal in a family is to pass those memories on, it isn't going to happen, the good memories. So what is the way? Well, we mentioned one, just by accident it goes into your estate, and if all the family gets together and they can come to their own agreements, that undivided interest may work. At least it passes it to be decided by the next generation. Typically, when this mission statement is done and there's a goal to pass this property to the next generation or members of it, certain members of it, the other way to do it is to transfer it during life. And there you run into some tax problems. If this is a larger estate, a taxable estate, the family has other assets, the parents have other assets, gifting that, there's an annual gift exclusion, and there's an overall gift exclusion, where if you transfer too valuable a property, you have to start paying tax on it. So that may not be the most efficient way to do it.
So this would be gift tax?
Be gift tax, right, or using up your lifetime exemption.
And we know that's no good.
Well, we've gone over that in trust in the states.
Yeah.
So you were talking about absent a plan, if you just let it happen, that could cause lots of trouble, lots of fighting among the heirs. But there's some other legal structures that you could do during your lifetime if you're the first generation to transfer
and
the property.
You know me, I like to get a little more complicated, Tom.
So. Well, of course.
So what I'm just going to cite is two different avenues. One is called a Qualified Personal Residence Trust. And that is used, that's a relatively recent addition to the law. And the way this works, it could either be the personal residence, but it can also be used for a vacation home. And the way that trust works is that there is a trust document, and the parents transfer the property into this Qualified Personal Residence Trust, a QPERT. And what are the requirements of that? Well, first of all, the parents transfer the property into the trust, yet the parents retain what is called a life estate, so the right to use it during a certain number of years. And let's say, depending on the age of the parent or parents, they're 60 years old, and they say, well, we want to use it till at least 75. So then you get a calculation or actually actuaries are involved. We've talked about that in previous sessions. But what the trust does is gets after the 15 years, the trust ends up with a property. So what you have is a valuation of the gift. What is the gift? The gift is the value of the property after the life estate, after letting someone else use it for 15 years. And what does that do for us? Well, the gift then becomes much smaller, because if you give a property to the kids for their eventual use, or for the trust, the kids through the trust, the property value after 15 years of use is less than it would be if they had use of it today.
Immediate use of it.
Immediate use of today. Couple requirements. It's a pretty technical area, but one thing that has to, the parents have to live for the 15 years, otherwise it's includable in their estate. But
And all bets are off?
Then all bets are off. But, you know, you make it a reasonable amount of time, and the odds of one, at least one of the parents, if they're a married couple, is pretty good odds. And you're not hurt if it didn't happen anyway. The second thing is, if the parents decide to continue use of that after the 15 years, then you have to charge rent. So, where are they coming?
I'm going to put my lake cabin in a qualified trust, and I'm going to outlive it, and I'm going to pay rent. Wow, this is a good deal.
And you'll be paying the rent at age 90.
Here we are.
But then, you know, that also, when you think about it, there's a cost of maintaining. We'll talk about that a little later. And that rent, you know, may be a large estate that the parent wants to give more, and the effect can then help fund the costs of the property, the maintenance and other costs, improvements. It's a great estate planning tool. But it also can work even if you don't have an estate tax. There are some different issues there. If you don't have a taxable estate, then sometimes it's to the benefit of the parent to continue to hold that asset and then get a step up in basis. Now, we have some more estate tax rules coming, and probably some legislation we haven't even thought of yet. As all things, they may change. But the Cooper can be a nice way to transfer the property. Then once the trust owns it, that's where we have all the agreements binding the beneficiaries. There'd be a trustee, the case of the Massachusetts Friends. The beneficiary has some rights, but they can't blow up the property and force you to sell it. The trustee is in control. So that's an excellent way to do things. The other method I like, and we use this for operating business entities too, is LLCs, limited liability companies. And how that works is that the parents would transfer the property into a limited liability company, which is really formed under partnership law. And a couple things could happen. Either the parents could be the only partners in this family partnership, really. They can continue being the only partners, and maybe those partnership interests are transferred at death. So, like the first example where the property went into the estate, now we have the LLC or the partnership interests going into the estate. And then those partnership interests are distributed from the estate. Now, what's the difference there from getting an undivided interest? In a partnership interest, you have a partnership LLC agreement that has rules. And that's where you have the opportunities to really lock this down. Try to anticipate disputes. Try to get rules involved. And then you would typically have a managing partner, a managing member of that partnership who's going to kind of rule this partnership. And that's where I think there's a lot of benefits to using the partnership.
Okay, now when the first generation is there and they own the property, say it's a vacation home, and they've paid for it, they've paid the mortgage, they've maintained it, they've paid the real estate taxes, they're pretty much in charge of who's going to use it. But now if you set up a trust or if you set up an LLC and you're trying to provide for future generations, now you really got the question, who's going to take care of the property, who's going to manage the property, all of those things. And is that the problem that you're anticipating with this agreement, with this management agreement that you're referring to?
Well, there's that's just some of the potential problems that I'm trying to address with the management agreement. Certainly, who's going to use it? There's a method of, you know, depending on how many siblings are, what weeks. You know, you got to develop a calendar. Who's going to maintain it? Where's the money coming through? Who's going to decide if you want to add on to the property? All those things can be addressed to the general partner. What also I think more important is addressed is that sibling who is not going to that cabin up in Minnesota. They live in Florida or they live in California. And number one, they don't want to contribute to the operating expenses. They're not going to use it as much as the people who live an hour or two away. And what that addresses within a partnership agreement, just like a business partnership agreement, is what I would say a buy-sell or an option to sell. And I've seen very good provisions in those agreements that would say for that sibling in California who doesn't want to use it, wants to get bought out, say, okay, here's what we do. First of all, there's a right of first refusal. The other siblings say, we'll buy you out because we want to keep this in the family. We know you'd rather have the money. So we'll buy you out straight, fair market value, no problem. I've even seen or recommended to add something. Well, what if the property is very valuable and the other siblings don't have the cash or the other partners?
Right.
So I put in those agreements or recommended to put in those agreements a payout period. So not only can we buy this at fair market value, but we reserve the right to pay you over 10 years at a certain amount of interest.
Just like a buy-sell agreement for a corporation, you put together a similar agreement that deals with valuation issues and time payout, as you say, and so forth, so that they've got the mechanism in place, if you will, to deal with these potential problems.
Exactly. I think that's very important. And so no one partner will be able to go in and for sale the property. I mean, any partnership agreement, this doesn't mean someday this property, one generation, two generations, or three generations, might not be sold someday, or maybe they want to buy a different one or a bigger one, but then it's the majority. Then you have voting rights in the partnership. But it prevents the one dissident, or not so much a dissident, but the one that really doesn't want to use the property and believes it's unfair and also doesn't want to put out the money, because the partnership agreement should say, how do you fund this thing? Who pays for it?
I want to go back to that LLC structure for a second, because we're talking multi-generations. First one is Tom buys for his family, and then by third, fourth generation, if depending on some families, there could be 85 kids.
There could be a lot of them.
Now, with the LLC structure, you can be taxed as an S-corp or as a partnership, right?
Yes, but usually in the family business, or family business, that would be true. But in the family vacation home, there isn't going to be any income.
Right.
So we're really using this just as a mechanism, not as a taxable entity, but as a way to preserve the property and to settle conflict. And when you get to that third, fourth generation, the 85 people, you know, how many, especially if it's in Minnesota, you don't have enough good weather to have 85 different family members use it.
You get one day.
Well, I was thinking of the remodeling costs and the property management costs. And
you got real estate taxes. You've got insurance issues.
Yeah.
You got maintenance issues. Now, if I really wanted to have that property and pass it along to future generations, and I put it in an LLC, could I not also put an insurance policy on my life, so that when I do get hit by the bus and go, that the LLC has some funds in there to deal with the maintenance issues and the costs going forward?
Yeah, I think that would be an excellent idea. I think the next thing we should talk about is, you know, how do you maintain the property? And again, if you have a trust or you have an LLC, the trustee or the manager of the LLC has to determine how we do that. Well, number one, the maintenance is, who's going to maintain it? Is it going to be the individuals? How are you going to split it up? You know, I don't want to be the person that gets the May week and the October week and does all the work. So some families have designed provisions that say, well, we're all going to go up there in May, and we're going to get a couple, hotel rooms nearby, and we're going to do this twice a year. Others have split it up. Everybody has their duties. When you use this week, you're going to do this. They split it up. If there's the life insurance policy that Tom mentioned, and there's some money in it, or it's been funded, maybe this family doesn't want to do any work and just wants to enjoy it. And the partnership has the means to do that, they're going to hire a caretaker or a contractor to do that stuff. And that's where Tom's note of the life insurance to fund the LLC could be a great idea.
So if you can anticipate some of the problems of future generations, we might be able to deal with some of those, but you have to put the mechanism in place to say, okay, who's in charge of the property after I go? Who's in charge of the second generation? Who's in charge of the third generation? Some kind of methodology where it's organized and it limits the number of fights that can happen among family members.
Right, and you have to have, I would hope that most families, and probably through this agreement, could... The agreement can anticipate that certain family members might not have the income that the other family members do. And with this method, I think we can anticipate some of that. Maybe there's some solutions that the siblings with not as much money as the others, maybe they can do more maintenance. Maybe they marry somebody who's a contractor. And we'd all hope that family situations work out that way, but at least there's a method to deal with that. And hopefully the families will deal with the people who can't participate as much as the others.
I'm thinking of another one, just the rustic lodge versus the having a play escape place. That was another one, talking about the problems that can arise. They had
a sanctuary. You want to set up a sanctuary?
Well, one of them, no, actually it was a lodge, and it was a rustic lodge. It was gorgeous, and the siblings fought over putting electricity and wireless and, all sorts of things into it, and half of them wanted it and half didn't. You can't anticipate. I wouldn't, they could, they're grandparents couldn't anticipate, when they had put this into their trust.
Well, and that's why you don't want to restrict the sale of it.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe the third generation that's used to the big screen TVs, and at some point that hopefully the majority rules would determine that. But
sell it, split up the money, and they can go each get their own vacation home.
And we've seen that happen, too, where as you get more and more people and they want to use it for all of July, not just a day or two, that can be what happened. But in this case, at least the whole family would have to agree, at least by a majority, to sell the property and do this.
Jeff, I think that risk management is a big part of this issue, both for somebody slips and falls, gets hurt, and what do you do with the issue
There's
of toys?
Tom again.
What do you do with the issue of toys? Most of these vacation properties come with toys, boats, ATVs, all kinds of things. How do you handle that risk management issue?
Well, you have to have a very good insurance person and a risk management person to look at those issues, and especially as it grows. I mean, that's what the manager of the partnership should deal with. I don't know if you deal with all that in the agreement, but I think as the manager of the family manager of the property, you have to take the advice of those risk management people. You have to deal with issues of use. Do you just allow family to use it? Can a family say tell their neighbors, go ahead, use the cabin this weekend? The toys you mentioned, the jet skis and the propensity for potential injuries, you've got to protect against that. And that is, it's very important to get the right insurance. And the insurer will ask you, well, who's going to use this? I mean, how many families do you have here? What are the age of the kids? Do you let your neighbors? Are they all bringing friends up? And those are the types of things that the professional risk advisor has to say, here's how much you need. And then it's important to... if you use either of these, either the trust method or the LLC method, make sure the insurance is changed and titled in the proper entity.
You know, vacation property is not for fun, just for fun anymore, is it?
Well, I've taken a very simple concept. When the first generation is there and you've got the cabin or the vacation place, they're taking care of everything and they set the rules.
Simple.
And it's not a problem. But now you want to do something nice. You want to pass along the vacation property to future generations. Now it's become really complicated, hasn't it?
Yeah.
And you've dealt with this issue enough. I know you well enough. You've dealt with this with a lot of your clients, but what's the other part of the team? Is it you and the attorney, and you sit down and talk about these structures, and you talk about rules, and you talk about funding? I mean, you have to have a cabin fund to pay the bills.
Yeah, and that the accounting can help. The account can help set up. How do we fund this? What's it going to cost? Help with some projection. The attorney is important to set up either of these entities, and also. Not even the attorney who just sets up the entities, but it's important to look at the estate planning side of this too. So you need to look at that, because all of these have estate issues. And I've already said that maybe it's not great to transfer this gift at this time. Maybe if there isn't a gift tax or an estate tax, maybe you want to leave it. And I think I forgot to mention the LLC. One of the methods is to leave the parents as the partners, but you can also start gifting some of those partnership interests if you have an estate issue. The other thing I'd like to mention is again, it has nothing to do with tax, but it's you've got to keep a calendar. Number one, you have to say who's qualified to come up here, who's allowed to come up here, what are the rules? How are we going to follow the rules? How are we going to maintain it? How are we going to fund it?
You keep emphasizing this. It sounds like this is the biggest issue you come across.
Yeah, I like that middle week in July. That's that's why the Aquitennial historically has been that week, because it's the nicest week of the year. So you need to have some system, whether on how to allocate the times. Now, some families have done a given week every year. Some people have rotated the weeks. Some have done kind of a lottery, kind of like divvying up Twins or Vikings tickets, pick a day. So all of these things come about, and hopefully that family place can stay with the family and everybody get along and enjoy it.
Jeff, what I'm hearing you tell us is that if we want to transfer a vacation property to future generations, you need to think of it like a business. If you're going to form an LLC, an LLC usually comes with a member agreement, and that member agreement in this particular case deals with the how do you pay the bills, how do you manage the property, how do you manage the risk, how do you manage the toys, all of these things. And if you do it formally and put your team together, your estate planning attorney and your accountant and your lawyer, and draft those documents, we can anticipate a lot of the things that might come up. And if you do it properly, like anything else, you can fend off a lot of that.
And as a business, you also have an exit strategy if there are upgrades or the people want to sell it. So it is very much like a business entity.
Any final thoughts about vacation properties, Jeff?
I'd like to use one soon.
We'll have to include you in the membership agreement. When
exactly.
I put it together, you're going to be the manager. How about that?
That would be great.
Well, Jeff, this has been a fascinating discussion about vacation properties and some of the issues that can come up. I'm Tom Lyons with my co-host Sam Zordich and our producer Jordan Jorgensen. I'd like to thank Jeff Starboard from Larry Beskoff, the Peterson Company, for participating in this session of Today's BusinessRadio.com.
Thanks, Jeff.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Today's Business Radio with host Tom Lyons. Tom is the owner of Phelan Partners Limited, an M&A advisory and consulting firm. Today's Business Radio is also available around the clock and around the world at todaysbusinessradio.com. That's todaysbusinessradio.com. All content provided by Today's Business Radio is provided for general information only and should not be treated as a substitute for professional advice from your legal, accounting, and business advisors. Today's Business Radio is not liable for the contents of this podcast, nor does it endorse any commercial product or service mentioned or advised in this podcast. All radio shows, podcasts, and other content provided by Today's Business Radio is copyrighted and may not be reproduced or downloaded for any reason without prior written consent by Today's Business Radio. If you have a topic you'd like covered at Today's Business Radio, log on to our website at todaysbusinessradio.com and submit your comments and questions. Thanks for listening to todaysbusinessradio.com.